Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You gotta find what works for you. Find a balance that lets you be you.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. It is a great Wednesday evening right here in Central Kentucky, where I'm broadcasting to you live. And, of course, this is Stephen Zimmer. And joining me for tonight's adventure for episode number 346 is the lovely, the vivacious, the wondrous Holly Phillippe, who has just joined us, I believe, right now. I hope. Hi, Holly.
I'm here.
Good timing. You timed it perfectly. So welcome.
I was making some margaritas, so I had to, you know, crush my ice.
There you go. It's always a celebratory occasion when we have a Star Chamber Show live podcast. So yes, that sounds like Holly's getting in the right zone for it, and we're gonna have a great guest for you just a little bit. Chat room is open and working. So like I said, as always, just refresh your page if you have any trouble logging in. Sometimes that happens. Looks like Metal Beck is the first one in the chat room today. It's not like anybody actually wins prizes for that, but we do like to call, you know, whoever we see first in the chat room. So, yeah, it's an honor of sorts.
We spare
no expense on this show. So there you go, Metal Beck. That's what you get. Oh, it's been a good week. Good week. I mean, it's just right now as we head toward, you know, of course, the Christmas and New Year's part of the year, and Friday Hanukkah starts for those of you observing that. So it's definitely a lot coming very quickly. But the Imaginarium Convention, of course, the convention that this podcast is affiliated with, it's pretty much a 7-day a week task now, and we do have a lot of new announcements since we gave you the updates last week. We had no less than 4 new spotlighted guests come aboard, and then we had it looks like 7 new panelists. So. Quite a lot. So I will take this carefully to make sure that we don't omit anyone from the recognition here. Last week we announced filmmaker and comic creator Devin Helton as a spotlighted guest. Devin's film, The Repairman, if you remember, won a lot of awards at the film festival last year and then went on to win numerous international film awards and screened very successfully at a number of film festivals. So I like to think that we were on to something because we were one of the first in his festival season and recognized it, you know, with several awards. And then he went on to win a lot more. So see, we have our pulse on what's good out there. That proves that our film festival does indeed recognize, you know, some of the great stuff that's up and coming in the indie film world. We're looking forward to having Devin back with us. And then, of course, also a previous award winner in the film festival and a great filmmaker who has produced and directed 4 feature films. And that's not an easy task. It's Chase Dudley. And we're really stoked about having him back with us as a spotlighted guest, a filmmaker, a producer, director, and with his partner, Samantha Dudley. They teamed up for, like I said, 4 featured films. You should be able to find them.
A wonderful human being.
Yes, great guy. If you check it out, Amazon Prime, I'm sure you can find at least a few of these. Marvelous Mandy, Payday, Beast of the Field, and locked in. But yeah, give his film some love out there. If you watch him, give him a review, because that always helps. And then, of course, the one and only, he's been a guest on here several times, popular guest at Imaginarium, and every year his created franchise, the sci-fi franchise, Submerged Universe, keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Of course, I'm speaking of Demetrius Witherspoon, and he is, of course, like I said, the creator of the Submerged Universe, encompasses 5 award-winning short films, an animated TV pilot, comic books, a novel, collectible card game, action figures, apparel. I mean, it is crazy how much stuff that he has accomplished completely independently. I mean, just the quintessential indie creative, bar none. I mean, he's doing it in all these
and
different types of media.
And another great human that will sit and chat with you and mentor.
Absolutely.
And you could definitely spend time with, and he would love to chat with you.
Yeah, and we got to get him back on the show, because he has a feature film, an animated spinoff series, and a documentary all in development as we speak for Submerged Universe. So we do need to get Demetrius back in here to give us a full update on all this stuff. I mean, he's so active. And then also on the spotlighted guest front, we announced Michael Williams, of course, one of the original Dragonlance authors with the novels Weasel's Luck, Galen Benighted, and Arcady. And then he also, of course, is the writer of very ambitious literary fiction, mythic fiction, a group of novels called The City Quartet, which is actually 4 books that can be read in any order with 4 stories intertwined. It's really amazing how those books all kind of work together, yet can be read completely separately. It's a really amazing group, or you'd call it a series, but yeah, like I said, you can read them in any order, but amazing, amazing literary work. So he'll be there. And then, of course, last but not least, we have some new panelists, which I'm really excited about. Some that are Imaginarium favorites, some are brand new faces. We welcome Sean Lamb, Eric Moser, J. Patrick Lamar, and Sako Toomey, Amanda K. King, Michael R. Swanson, and J. Edwards Holt, all of them as new panelists. And J. Edwards Holt is coming for the first time, as is J. Patrick Lamar and Sean Lamb. So those are all first-time guests at Imaginarium. And then the others, Eric Moser, Sako Toomey, Amanda K. King, Michael R. Swanson, of course, are definitely – You've been Imaginarium. You know how awesome they are. So, I mean, Holly, that's just in the last since the last show.
Yep.
So that's quite a bit. Quite a bit we've announced. So that's awesome. I mean, I can't say enough about the quality of the panelists and spotlighted guests, and love to give them spotlight. You know, because we definitely. Want to give you every bit of the information we can as the convention develops, and it will be no exception. I mean, every day in the next several days will be new announcements every single day. I mean, we've got a lot in queue and some big announcements on spotlighted guests and additional programming, and we also have a new individual patron to announce. So yeah, a whole lot. So by the time we do the show next week, we'll have another good list. So, Holly, is there anything you wanted to add to the as far as any comments on these guests or anything going on?
Well, I do want to add something. I know the holidays are hard on a lot of people, If you feel a need to talk to somebody, please do. Don't be rash in your decisions. Please reach out. There's always somebody. Nobody is completely alone, even though you feel like it. We had another death by suicide. That was, Twitch, that the DJ on Ellen DeGeneres' show. Wonderful, creative, great feller. It's very tragic. But I've also seen some other things out there on social media, some other people that need a lending ear, a shoulder, to cry on, if you, so to speak. Please be that for people. please check up on people. Friends you don't, you know, hear of much or that's quiet, please check up on them this holiday season because, you know, we all have our down times. We all have our moments. We all feel lonely at times. Please reach out, you know. Yeah, and that's what I wanted to say. We need to help each other. That's it takes a village, and we are a tribe, and we need to lift each other up in moments where we need a boost.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it's sad to see that for sure. Yeah, it's definitely a tough time of year. Yeah, because I saw a longtime friend of mine. They went back to the days when I did a lot of music activity. I learned that a friend of mine even passed. Name is Patrick Gibson, a phenomenal lead guitar player, and just learned of his passing over the weekend. It was not the same situation. Obviously, it was a different reason, not self-inflicted like the one Holly's talking about, but definitely you know, love Patrick, and yeah, we have had a lot of mutual friends, and you know, I was just talking with Andy Hodd of the band Zero King last night about Patrick, and yeah, we're gonna have Andy on pretty soon to talk about Zero King. They have a brand new album and a lot of touring coming up in 2023, so there's a lot of positive there. But yeah, this is a time of year when you know, whether it's friends or family, you have a lot of heavy remembrances too that come about during the holidays and things are tough and that, you know, then, or you know, you lose someone during the holidays and it can be really a bit gutting, and so I mean it's tough, so it's a tough time for many, so Holly said, yeah, reach out and let's spread the positive chi around, for sure.
Yes, so, definitely.
So while we're on the topic of positive chi, what, did you have something? Because I was going to get over to our awesome folks that brought us tonight's show. What do you got, Holly?
Yes. Oh, I was just going to say, everybody knows that follows my Facebook knows that I try to post at least one positive post a day. Several if I, you know, I have the time, but or I make the time to do it in between doing stuff, I'll take the time. But I try to post at least a few uplifting things, you know, a day, because you never know who that's going to touch. And like I said, we got to be here for each other.
Definitely. And the two people are definitely here for us at the Star Chamber Show. Who brought you tonight's show are Sandy Lender, the genre blender, and the one and only Sandy. Ren Garcia. And Ren, keep up the pressure on Ren. He still has not officially sent in his info yet for Imaginarium to be a guest. So
get
some pressure on Ren. Send him notes.
Ren,
bug him.
I'm on to you.
Say, come on, Ren. You know, we love you, and you're definitely a big part of the Imaginarium Star Chamber Show family, and you need to be there for the 10th anniversary. It's one you do not want to miss. So yes, get on Ren from us, and then that way he'll know that you've seen this or you listen to the show. It's another good way to remind
right.
him that, yes, you listen to the show. And but yes, we're going to have Sandy Lender, a spot from Sandy, and then we're going to ask you the famous question with Ren Garcia's spot. So here's the one and only Sandy Lender. The genre blender, listen up and buy Sandy's books.
The latest release from author Sandy Lender is book 3 of the Fairy Holiday series titled I Know What Your Vampire Did Last Summer. It's a standalone story in the series, but it's got all the fun, humor, horror, and sweet paranormal romance you'd expect of a Lender blender vampire satire. Come on down to the Naples Hideaway and Marina for a fun and romancy vacay. But watch out for the Grendwolves and the random femme fatale who thinks she's competing for your vampire's attention. Pick up I Know What Your Vampire Did Last Summer by Sandy Lender today.
Thank you, Sandy. You're awesome. And yeah, folks, buy her books as gifts for friends. There's a good idea. It's a good way to support Sandy's work and make other people, readers in your life, very happy because her stuff is so good. And here is the one and only Ren Garcia and the question of the hour.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
Yes, Ren Garcia. We are weird enough indeed.
Yes, Ren. We are. We are, my friend. Thank you. Yeah, Ren Garcia, League of Elder. And he's got a great, he's got one of those titles broken up as kind of like an audio book on his YouTube channel, because that's a really nice way to kind of sample his work. But yes, buy the League of Elder series books. They are top-notch folks. So now, yes, we are waiting for our guest to call in, Holly. You might drop our guest a quick note just to make sure they're not having any trouble calling in, because I don't see them just yet. But we will continue with the show. We will continue with the show.
The show must go on.
Oh, yes. And yes. We've got this one, and we have two more coming up before the end of 2022. So this week's and the next week, which is technically our pre-Christmas show, and you know what that means. So we got some great guests on that one, and I'm hoping that it'll all work out as far as our usual Christmas Eve themed show co-host joining us, Tommy B. Smith. Next week's guests have scheduled Sally Ann Monty and Karen Williams. So we'll actually have a double header on our featured guests next week. Then we have, of course, to round out the new year, the one and only Pete Catania from Copa Catania's YouTube and Rumble channel. It does pop culture reviews. It's just really, really taken off. And, of course, he's also the author of Why Not Wichita, and the sequel to that is imminent from what I understand. So Pete will have a whole lot of updates to give us, and, he's been making a lot of headway
awesome.
With his subscribers. And just
I do have a
Pete's
question.
Fun. Yes.
Stephen, I do have a writing question to get us started.
Well, ask quick, because we just got our guest calling. So, make it real quick.
Okay, I'm going to ask. Well, let's bring her on, and then I'm going to ask a question. I will actually save it.
Well, make sure it's for our guest, too. I hope.
It will apply to both.
So, looking forward to speaking with tonight's guest. Yes, we are moving definitely onto the topic of writing. And tonight's guest is a writer of young adult fiction, children's books, and even a book on the craft of writing. Love that. 5 Minutes to Success, Master of the Craft of Writing. And definitely a great writer, and I believe that's the first time on the Star Chamber show. So I'd like to welcome the one, the only Jerry Faye Maynard. Hello, Jerry.
Hello, Jerry.
Hi, guys.
Oh, we're getting a little feedback from you. The show turned up.
Gotta turn my volume down. Does that help?
Yes.
Yeah.
Turn the volume off. Mute your computer.
Yeah.
I'm in my cell phone.
Or mute your computer.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, because I am getting an echo on that.
I am too.
All right, I believe you. I just am on my cell phone. If I mute my phone, I can't talk.
That's true.
Do you want me to try my computer?
I would suggest, Holly, get a router in like you do sometimes.
I'll tell you what, Jerry.
I'm going to send you my personal phone number, and then I'm going to merge the call. Okay.
All right, let me leave.
We'll get you right back on here. Okay, that was wild, folks. Yes, we definitely had a doubling effect
going on there.
Yeah, I've never had that happen on a straight call-in before. So we'll have to noodle through and figure out why that is occurring. But yeah, I was getting an echo effect on that.
Yeah, because I'm on my cell phone.
Right. Yeah, I was getting an echo effect on that. So, but this should work. This should work. So, yeah, don't hold on, folks. There's no worries. A spectacular way to begin the show. Special effects, and yes, we didn't even have to budget for those, and we had special sound effects. So, as Holly was saying earlier,
I'm gonna
we spare no expense. We spare no expense here at the Star Chamber Show.
So,
there we go. Merge.
Okay, now let's try it again.
There we go.
Okay.
Hello. All right.
That's better.
There we go.
Okay.
That's better. We're getting
still a little
echo.
Feedback. I don't know why, because if you have like a computer on or anything, yeah, mute it, but she said you're just on yourself.
Yeah, I'm on my phone.
So weird.
Okay.
I know.
That is so odd. but
it's better, though. I mean, it's not so distracting. It is better.
Yes. So,
how is Jerry?
Jerry's fine. She's doing much better.
Awesome.
Good. So what's new in the pipe? What do you got new? Do you have a new book coming out? Are you working on one?
Well, the newest thing, the brand new thing that just hit the market in December is my comic books with FSK. So I'm just thrilled to death to have them out. And so I have two stories in the Cypher issue, and he's given me – I have two properties of his that I'm currently writing for. So I feel all grown up.
Fantastic.
Is this your first comic adventure?
No. My first comic adventure was a disaster because, you know, tuition. He's actually picking up my personal comic this next year. And so that'll be coming out along the way as I continue to write for him on his properties. So
that's very nice.
So tell us a little bit about what is it about?
Well, in Cypher, which is his anthology thing, I have two. One of them is done by the storyline. It was really an interesting project. It came from Alyssa Sanchez was the creator, but she needed a little bit of help with the writing. So it was a huge team effort, which, as you know, when you're usually a writer, it's all in a individual world in your head, you know. So getting somebody else's story on paper was like a really interesting project. So
yeah, it's like a co-creator.
Yes, yes. Uh-huh. So making sure that I'm faithful to her ideas and that the characters are representative of what she wants. And it's a really nice adventure portal story done with all women. So, you know, women creators, women editors, women writers, women artists. And we had one guy who worked with us, Andy Corti, who is like the world's best editor in the entire world, I think. And occasionally he would like step into the fray, the creative fray between us,
right,
and kind of go, okay, this is an interesting conversation. But it was really nice because it was always about the work. What are we going to do to make the work shine? What are we going to do to make this real?
Well, that's cool, since you can sit and bounce ideas off each other.
Yes, which is really rare.
Yeah. Brainstorming while you're going.
Yes. Sometimes there was a lot of brainstorming. You know. And
I was going to say, was the comic book released in just a print or a print and digital editions?
I'm It's print and digital because everything that FSK does goes through Kickstarter with digital awards as well as print rewards.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah, a lot of yes. I noticed a lot of comic creators are turning toward Kickstarter for comic book projects. Yeah, yeah, we've talked to a few guests that have that.
Yeah. Comic books are so expensive, and yet the cover price is so cheap. So, you know, it's kind of a disconnect from the reality of the cost and the reality of the buyer. So it's really,
right.
you know, like, what are they going to pay for this, you know, 24-page, 32-page book?
Right. Yeah, because people don't take, you know, regular, like, lay people, reapers, that aren't, you know, creative. They don't take into consideration that all the work that goes into the illustration.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cheaper than doing a screenplay. I mean, producing a movie on the scale of things. You know?
Right.
But it's more expensive than writing a book.
Oh, by far.
Yes. Yeah. It's a. Uh-huh. Yeah, we had talked to Peter Wellmering. He has done a few in that area, but yeah, those campaigns are definitely interesting. Because I mean, a Kickstarter campaign, you have to do you know so much to get them funded. So. Tell us a little bit about the campaigns and what you had to do as far as activities for those.
Yeah. This is where it's really, really nice to be working with a publisher and a team because, and I don't, you probably don't know Michael Watson. He's done a lot of the local Comic-Con conventions around Ohio for a couple of years when he first started. So he's the owner and publisher of Freestyle Comics, or, you know, FSK. And
uh-huh.
he's put together an incredible team of people, of artists and writers and creative people. And he's also pulled in some independent, it's just brilliant, some independent people who were, like, out there with really good products but kind of struggling, you know? So he's put them all into his little fold, in his little nest. So when we do a Kickstarter, we all pitch in and we all do. So there's the art and there's the writing and there's the posters and the you know, making sure all the tiers are there. But there's also the promotion bit. You know, like right now, I'm really thrilled to be promoting this next one. It's called Green Zone, and it's done by Mr. Fish out of North Carolina somewhere down there. Anyway, but it's about alien, it's like alien monster type thingies that are in the police force. It's like such a cool idea. So we're all working right now on that.
It's like the Kentucky Goblin.
Yes.
Have you read up on the Kentucky Goblin?
I did a couple years ago when I was looking for an art project for a friend of mine in Kentucky. I know.
We were just introduced to this last weekend. Cassandra Morgan, author Cassandra Morgan, was here, her and her husband. And they told us about it. And I said, well, we have got to check this out. And they showed us a video of a podcast they listened to. And that's the first time we'd heard about the Kentucky Goblins, but that's what it reminded me of.
Yeah, I'm in love with Green Zone and the art and Fish's work, but I'm really in love with just having a team. You know, because as a writer of novels and children's books and things like that, I have a team when I go out to do promotions, but it gets really hard to live in your brain all by yourself all the time.
Right.
No. Oh, definitely.
That is true.
Yeah, definitely does. Yeah, definitely. What were some of the tiers in your campaign, if you could describe some of those?
There's always a digital campaign, a digital tier, and then there's, it goes all the way up with, like, if you get he did a phenomenal set where he put together all of his books for Women's History Month with a different one of his one of the female characters on the cover. So when you put them all together, they made a poster.
Oh, cool.
So when we were coming out with Cypher, which is like all women, you know, that was one of our promotions for that was this. So if you bought all, I don't know, 10, 12 books, and you could put line them up and get the get this really panoramic view of all the women in the book, in the books that we sell. It was amazing. And
well,
then he did
awesome.
That as a poster for a tier. We have a ton of the really cool, they're metal bookmarks. I've never seen them anywhere else, but they're really shiny. And then this, I think even for Green Zone, we're doing sneakers and hoodies, which are add-ons. So you can, you know, pick what tier you're on, add on, and then add on the sneakers, add on the hoodies, add on the T-shirts.
Well, having merch is very good to have, it shows. Yeah, people always love merch.
Yeah, I don't. We don't carry merch like that at shows. Well, I mean, I don't know about you, but I have found that when I'm working a table and we have T-shirts, making sure we have the right amount of T-shirts in the right size is like a logistical nightmare.
It's true, because you cannot judge the crowd. But you don't know exactly. You know, how many sizes of this you should have and that, you know.
Right. So you have all this money tied up in expensive merchandise. That
yeah, we go through
may
that every
move.
Yeah, we go through that every year with Imaginarium T-shirts. The only good news is that they sell well enough now that we always sell enough to cover it. But yeah, it's a tough judgment.
It used to not be that way. Yeah, so I can understand.
Yeah, so and I love my Imaginarium T-shirt. I do wear it still.
Still holds up. All right, that's good. Joe Garcia, of Fast Custom Shirts, will be happy to know that. I'll let him know.
Well, Jerry, you're going to have to get back next year for the 10th anniversary and get you a new one.
Well, I'm
yes.
in Virginia now, not in Ohio.
Well, you're still close. Ain't too far.
It's far enough away. I have other shows that I have booked. But there's only so many times I can drive out to Ohio.
Right.
So, okay.
Imagineering
is not
Virginia.
On the list this year.
So you are in Virginia now. Okay. Yeah, because I don't know. Yeah, I thought you were based out of Ohio. So yeah, I guess you moved.
This last year I had knee surgery. And as I was recovering from knee surgery, we made a major move from Dayton, Ohio to Fredericksburg, Virginia.
All right. That's a beautiful area.
Yeah, it's great.
I love that area.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Virginia's beautiful.
It is
plus
beautiful.
That gets you in the middle of a lot of different shows that you didn't have exposure to before. There's a lot of good stuff out in North Carolina and Virginia and that kind of region.
Right, which FSK is doing some of those, and I'll participate in that. But when I'm in Dayton, I have a promotion team I work with. There's four of us, and we do all the shows together. I mean, it works really well. But they're not coming out to Virginia. They'll come out to one show when I pick one good one. So, you know.
So,
probably when I'm promoting my comic book, we'll do like Baltimore, and they'll come out for that.
Right.
Yeah, Balticon. That's an Imaginarium affiliate. We recognize some events and conventions that are really, really good, and we work with them as a kind of like cross-promote. But Balticon is one of those, and that's a really good convention in Baltimore.
Yeah.
Yeah, we like to spotlight them. But, yeah, that's one you might visit because I hear that's a really nice one and probably sell a few comic books there for sure.
If we can get in, I'm not sure how juried it is.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, because I know that Morgan Hazelwood is involved with them. She's a guest every year with us, but I know she's involved with them somehow out there. But good events out in the Baltimore region and all over there. So you'll have to give us a heads up on how they all go, the new ones you go to, so we can get a little review of them as you do them.
Yeah,
that'd be cool.
So what do you have scheduled for next year? I'm curious about some of the events you do have for next year.
I have Gem City in Dayton, and I have Cincinnati Comic Expo, and I have Ohio Anime.
Nice.
And that's all I have scheduled at the moment. But that takes me out to Ohio in June, July, and September.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like 10 hours in a car, 20 hours in a car, 20 hours in a car every month, so.
Yep, I'll build some road miles.
Yeah.
But the Cincinnati Comic Expo, I've heard a lot of good things about that one.
We do that show every year. That is a great show. I love that show. Not as much as I love Gem City, though, in Dayton. That's it's a much smaller show. And the thing I love about it is it's a different crowd every day. So Jesse does not bring in, you know, big, expensive guests at all. You know, so there's none of that competition of people only coming to buy autographs. And you have a different crowd every day. Every day they spend, they come with money in their wallet ready to buy. That's not true at Comic Expo because A, they come for the guests, and B, if they come Friday, Saturday, Sunday, sometimes they come Thursday night, I think, I don't know. And books are the last thing they buy.
Right.
With the rest of their money. So Sundays, we do a lot of our sales.
Yeah,
that's why I'd imagine, Aaron, you never wanted it to be what we call a cattle drive, you know, where people only want to come to see the celebrities and stand in line to get their picture taken or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, we never did want that. We want it to where all creatives and all fans of creatives and readers are all welcome and, you know, all of our guests are accessible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, answer questions. We'll sit and talk with you. We'll mentor. You know, we try to keep the most positive group as we can. You know,
right.
That's the whole premise. Yeah, we tried to.
Yeah.
That's why we're a little different. That just feel like, you know, we're at Comic Con. Comic Cons are fun. Don't get me wrong. I think they're fun. You know, you can go see your favorite actors, your favorite people playing your shows, or, you know, stuff like that. That's cool, but that's just not, you know, that's not for all of us writers and publishers and, you know, we like the panels and workshops and the programming and you know, talking to everybody.
Now, Wendy and I always do panels at both Gem City and Comic Expo, and we will have between 20 to 35 people at our panels.
Cool.
Which is really a huge number,
right,
compared, you know, for a writing panel and a non-show panel. But so, and I always say that I'm there for the people that got dragged to the show.
Nice. That's a good line. Oh man. But
yeah,
the small shows never should be underestimated. I mean, I've always said that, sometimes a small show can be far more, you know, successful and satisfying event for like an author than necessarily the gigantic Comic-Con. It can be, you know, and I think you're talking about the one in Dayton. I think that reflects that, where you come away from those feeling real good.
Oh, yeah. And it's nice to see it grow. I mean, it's had a little bit since COVID. It's had a little bit of a hiccup and stuff, but It's a family right. show. It's run by a family. You know who it is. If I have a problem, I know who to go to, you know.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, those are the good ones. I love those.
Yeah.
Because I have never been – I do, like Holly said, I do enjoy some of the Comic-Con thing, but it's, you know, my preference is actually the mid-sized and smaller events. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But that's cool. I'm interested to see what Virginia and Baltimore events that you add as you get those booked.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. It'll be nice to start including, you know, more things.
Yeah. And we got a question from the chat room. I think the show that you were talking about just now in Dayton was Gem City. Is that like Gem as in Gemstone?
Yes, Gem City Comic Con. It's in Dayton at the convention center. I forget when it is. I think it's in July this year.
Nice. Yeah, I just want to answer the question that came in from Sandy.
Hmm.
So, Holly,
I'll have to look
let's see. Yeah, we'll have to look that up for sure, because that's one I have not been to yet.
It's July 22nd, 23rd of 2023.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the week after Imaginarium, so we will be probably brain dead.
That's why I'm not doing Imaginarium this year. I was like, I know there's a reason why, but that's it.
We have grown. You will be pleasantly surprised at the new venue, and so in 2024, I hope you can join us again. I loved having you.
It was fun. It was a fun show. I loved all the panels and the networking. I mean, I think you networked there better than any other show.
Yeah, the networking is very important.
Yeah, that's always a good aspect. And that's what you can do better, I think, at some of the smaller shows is the meeting people and networking. I always like that.
I agree.
Yeah.
But let's go on. Let's move to because I know you have so many spheres of writing that you are involved in. So let's tackle children's or YA and children's books next.
Okay.
Yeah, because you've got several titles, and I'd love to give you a chance to talk about those a bit and what you have available.
Well, a lot of my books are out of print, and I have kind of been dragging my feet about putting them back in print. Just there's some things I want to think about logically and intelligently about them before I redo them. But Panda Girl is my YA. It's a contemporary young adult fiction about a young girl who moves from the city to the country, from New York City to upstate New York. And it takes you through 6th through 9th grade in the country. And it's kind of a coming of age fish out of water story type thing.
Nice. Yeah, because I looked through some of your titles and it looked like you had some nice stuff of that at least I was browsing on Amazon. I'm trying to remember all the titles, but yeah, it looked like I was reading some of your story too that you kind of got some of your origin in writing from I guess teaching 5th graders. Is that correct?
Yes. One of my books that's out of print, we used to do writer's workshop, and I had the crazy 5th grade class every morning to do writer's workshop with them. And one day I needed a piece of writing to demonstrate something, and I couldn't find it in our really meager library, so I just wrote a piece to take for them. And then that was the beginning of 4 Kicks, which is now out of print. But it was really fun to have them give me the kind of critique that we had been giving them all year when they read my stuff.
Very nice.
It was really nice. One of my kids, after I read a passage, he said, "I really like the story, but my one wish is that you would pick one word and not three." So when I was... I mean, don't you want them to know that one word's more powerful than three? I didn't know we had really got that across.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, plus for storytelling, you have your
age, so that's cool to get the feedback, you know, from that group. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is true. And you probably being an educator, you got a lot of got to observe a lot of good character inspirations from the fifth graders.
Yeah, I'm afraid I stole one of my characters from a combination of my kids, you know.
Oh, yeah.
In Red Kids. They knew, they would say, that part right there, that's this person. Yeah, maybe.
Yep.
Maybe.
Yes. Yes, writers always do that. It's you definitely write what you know. Yeah, And you have another one that I noticed called Octavia and the Bug Problem, which looked interesting. That looked like a younger children's book, from what I could see.
Right. This is my children's book for curious children. So it's a picture book, and it's kind of like science-based as well as fiction, because when my granddaughter was little, we could not get her to read fiction at all. She only wanted science books. And when she came home from her first day of preschool, she was really complaining about the school rules. And the kid's a genius. You know, she's labeled a genius. I don't just, you know, there are a few. Yeah. She's a brilliant child. Social skills are kind of tough. So I wanted to write her a story about why rules were important. But I knew that I had to include bugs or she wouldn't read it. So all through Octavia, which deals with the fact that the rule at school is you can't pick up bugs, is science facts about bugs that you can kind of read along the side. And Corey Woods did the art. I'm really excited about that. He did a phenomenal job with it. And It's difficult because it was my first children's book. It's not an easy bedtime read. It's a little longer than your average children's books.
Yeah, I noticed it was about 70 pages, and a little bit larger than the average children's book.
Yeah, but it's one of my favorite books, not just because of the art, but because it really goes through Octavia in a normal everyday environment where she comes to face-to-face with rules and they have to figure out as a family how to negotiate that and why the rules are important. So Octavia is book one of three. The other two are in my head, not written yet. So we'll see.
Very nice. Yeah, that one's that one's not too old. I noticed that was about a 2020 release, so that's not too long ago. So.
No, it's, yeah.
Yeah, that's,
yeah,
that's,
we lost
that looks interesting. Yeah, we did, unfortunately. Feels like we had about a two-year hiatus almost in the book world as far as a lot of activity.
Yeah.
So what I wanted to ask about is the 5 minutes to success. The
mm-hmm.
master craft of writing book that you wrote with C.W. Fogel.
Yes, Wendy and I wrote that. Wendy and I do a lot of writing workshops together, and we get the same questions at every time we do a workshop. Doesn't matter what we cover. And so one day I was like, why don't we write a book and sell it? And she said, who are we to write a book and sell it? And I said, well, if we don't know this stuff, nobody knows it. You know, just because we're not famous yet.
Right.
So because I'm an educator and my understanding of brain theory and the way it works was, let's write a book that's done in really short segments with reflection pieces at the end. So a friend of mine calls it the best bathroom read he ever has had, because you can actually pick it up. Go through the book, pick out the section you want to work on, read that piece, think about it or do the reflection or do the drawing or do the journaling or whatever that activity is, and then put it down and go away and come back and pick up a different thing. So if you really want to study character development, you can do that in 5-minute segments. So,
nice.
And it covers it from pre-writing all the way through published. And it,
yeah, you had a lot of good reviews on that one I saw, and pretty good sized book too. It's over 300 pages, so a lot of content on that.
Yeah, there's a lot of content. It's pretty thick. It works. You can get it as an ebook, but it works best as, you know, buy the copy of the book, because you really, as writers, I want you to write in the book, draw in the book, color in the book, think about it.
Mm-hmm. And good news, I just checked, just for our listeners, it's only $6.41 for the paperback version right now on Amazon.
Really? That's on sale.
Yeah, they got it on sale.
Yes, that's what it usually is. And it really is, even if you're an advanced writer, but sometimes you just like, if you really are going, I'm really struggling with motivation of this character. Why are they doing the things I'm doing? And you pick up that book and you run through that really short list of motivations, and then you think about your character in terms of that list. And then when you walk away, you go, oh, that was a really quick, easy refresher. I didn't have to read an entire book on character motivation, you know, to do that.
Yeah, I think the design of I'm interested in looking at this, too, for recommending it, because I like to recommend good writing books to people because, the bite-size approach that you have with five-minute, you know, kind of chapters and exercises. That seems perfect for the perfect person that, you know, definitely does not have a whole lot of time to spare.
It's better learning. That's the other thing. Mm-hmm. Learning when you break it up into 5-minute pieces with a little bit of reflection is retained longer and actually filed in your brain in a more consistent and effective manner for retrieval. I know, not that you wanted to hear the brain theory behind it. But
no,
that's,
tell us.
That's why it's so important. And a lot of teachers don't do that. They will lecture for 30, 40 minutes, and then they'll be like, okay, what'd you learn? You know, well, I learned that my mom has gone shopping today because I checked Facebook, you know?
Right.
So if you do it when you keep your teaching segment super short like that, and you actually have to use that knowledge that you were just taught, then it just is so much more powerful of a learning tool.
Well, it looks good. Looks really good. And are you going to be continuing to do some more writing books with your writing partner?
I don't know. Wendy and I have talked about it. We did I would want a different take, and we haven't quite figured out what that would look like. And Wendy's in the middle of doing a lot of phenomenal series right now. Like, she's got this, like, fantasy romance that she's writing. I don't know how many. She's up to, like, book 4 or something of those. So until that gets done, we're not going to be co-writing much. It's just the reality of working with a writer.
It sounds like an interesting writing partner. I saw in her bio that she was everything from a veterinarian to a scuba diver and cake decorator and marathon runner.
quite
a wide range of activities there.
And she's an incredible writer. I always think you should partner with somebody who's just a little bit better than you so that you pull yourself up. You know, I don't know, maybe you're not that way, but I always work better when I have a little bit of competition. So Wendy's a lot of competition.
Definitely, this is good because it gives you a couple of experienced writers' perspectives in this book too.
Right. Yeah, there are sections we do together, and then there's sections where it's obviously Jerry, obviously Wendy, and you hear both of our voices. And we planned it that way.
Very nice.
So one
Very
of the
nice.
Things that Wendy does all the time is, like, she'll go, when we're talking, she'll go, so. And then she'll start. And so when she put that in her writing, I took it all out. And she goes, no, that's my voice. Put it all back in.
That's awesome. Holly, you're an editor. You can comment on that.
Yes. Well, we love to read, from the author's point of view. We love to give the critique, but as an editor, you have to keep the author's voice in the forefront. You know what I'm saying? You cannot change the author's voice. So it's a fine line you walk, because you can give suggestions, but the author's voice, your voice, has to be in the forefront.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
And that's what is so important about the author-editor relationship, because you find a great author, like you have, Jerry, you were speaking of, that you stick with them.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like a marriage. It's until death we part type marriage. Yeah.
100%. Because you get to go with each other and your type of writing and the type of editing, and you all work together like a well-oiled machine.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
So as far as your writing goes right now, as far as works in progress, are you mainly going to focus on the medium or media of comics, or do you have some prose projects in the works right now?
It would be really nice if I would focus on one thing, but that's not going to happen.
I don't think none of us do.
I'm actually, for the very first time, I've been working for a couple of years on something that I really thought I understood what genre it was, but I couldn't make it make the beats. So I was at a writer's retreat with some friends, and they're like, that's because you're writing horror. This is pure horror. I didn't know I could write that even.
So how would you classify all the genres?
You got to step out of your comfort zone, and get your feet wet in another genre. And then you're like, whoa, okay, I can do this.
Yeah. So it's one of my favorite stories, and I've been working on it a while. I just seems like I only get time when I'm at a writer's retreat to really work on it. But it's a story about a young adult woman who is called back to her hometown to deal with the closing up of her grandfather's house, and she's had a funny kind of amnesia for most of her life that she can't figure out why she has it. And when she goes back home after all these years, the amnesia starts to crack and the memories start to leak in, and they're pretty ugly memories.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's like her subconscious is very
Right. So I really thought I was writing a thriller, but, I spent a lot of time, I read a lot of thrillers, I studied all the thriller beats, and I couldn't make this one line up at all. I'm like, okay. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So if you were going to list all the kind of genres that you write in, and even, like I said, like you didn't expect you to write horror in that instance, what have you written in so far, genre-wise?
Genre-wise, I've written three contemporary YAs, which I love. That's one of my favorites. And then I have this book that doesn't match up to a genre. We don't even know what to call it. It's a story about two friends, and one of them's in a coma, and the other one's trying to figure out why he's in a coma. And it has three timelines. It has the past, the present, and the ancient past. So, you've got Vikings running around in the fields of Pennsylvania, and you've got the two friends as young kids running around in those same fields, and then you've got current day where the friend, the other friend, is out trying to figure out what put his best friend in a coma. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so but we don't know. We talk about it all the time. What genre is this book?
So maybe a cross genre kind of approach.
Yeah. And it's got a little bit of mysticism in it. It's got, you know, it's a little bit of, it's not time travel because they don't travel through time. They cross each other in time, if that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
Like the ancient future at one point can cross into the present, and that's how they solve the mystery, actually.
Nice. Yeah, that sounds really interesting. And, yeah, I love genre blenders. I think those are becoming more and more popular with readers, the ones that, you know, kind of cross a few different genres.
Well, it's super hard to market and super hard to sell.
Can be,
you
yes.
know.
Got a
but I've seen more and more of it, though, out there. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a little short, and I have taken out the ancient past part, and I've put it back in, and I've taken it out, and I've put it back in, and now I'm putting it back in for the last time. And that'll make it a little bit longer and a more satisfying of a read and less sort of weird and wonky, I think. And then I will republish that one or look for a publisher. I don't know if I will or not. I haven't decided what to do with it.
Well, it sounds very interesting.
Yeah, it sounds really interesting. I love stories that kind of bring in different timelines like that. That's awesome.
Well, it's hard to judge the reader. You know, you just never know. I mean, you can put it out, they can sell more copies, or it might sell 10, but, you know, you just never know.
When it was published, it did not sell. I mean, in fact, it made my publisher really mad at me, that book.
Oh.
Yeah. She published it, and then she was a little frustrated, and she said, "You just think I'm going to publish every book you write. They're not all publishable." I was like, "Oh, maybe you're right."
Or maybe when you come out with it again, it'll be the right time for it, and the readers will connect. You never know.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think a different cover and the edits, and I'm a better writer. I don't think I had the skills to write that story when I first wrote it. I think I had to grow into that story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do some tweaks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So what other
And I don't think that's a concept we talk about very much.
True.
Well, feel free to elaborate on that.
Well, I think that a lot of times we have a story in our head, but we don't have the writing skills to tell it yet. And so we push the story and we kind of try to make it work instead of being okay with putting it aside on this back burner and working on other things that don't require those skills. Because not every book is a difficult write. Some books are fairly simple and easy to write. But some of them, you just don't have that skill level yet. You haven't figured out the story structure in a way that it'll make sense on the page, and you really need to let it simmer.
Mm-hmm.
And your skills will grow as you write. The more you write, the better your skills get.
That's the truth.
Absolutely. And
anything, the more you do it, the better you get.
Yeah.
And code mm-hmm. and kind of intertwined with writing regularly is reading. And so for you as a writer, you know, obviously you know how important reading is. So what do you read, and who are some of your main influences that you read for your writing?
I'm pretty funny about I do not read when I'm actually writing. Or if I am reading while I'm writing, I'm reading biographies, because biographies give you an insight into character motivation and development and growth better than any other book you're going to read. So I will read those because they will not color my writing. Anything else I read will color my writing. So before I write, when I'm in the research phase. So when I thought I was writing, you know, a thriller, I went out and I read 100 of, like, the best thrillers out there. You know, thank goodness for libraries.
Mm-hmm.
And I read them all, because when you read 100, all that really remains are the beat patterns and the things that make that genre the genre. Like, I could go research it online, but after I read 100, I know them instinctively.
Mm-hmm.
So, absolutely. And then when I'm writing, I don't read another thriller until I'm done with that book. I just, don't. When I wrote Octavia, I read, I would go into the children's librarian and they would be like, "What do you need today, Jerry?" And I would say, "I need every book you have about bugs." And they would like bring me the stack. And you know they have to reshelf them after you read them, you know?
Right,
so
right.
It's like you can't make enough homemade cookies to make up for that kind of shelving.
Well,
but
do you
as
have
a writer,
any,
go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say, are there any authors that you consider formative influences, like that inspired you when you're, growing up or becoming a writer?
I always say that I grew up on Shakespeare and on Dickens, so that's always one of those things I always have to fight. But I started writing again when I discovered an anime, which just sounds kind of weird, called Rayune Kenshin, and I wrote fan fiction for it. And my writing again as an adult started because of that.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Wholeheartedly 100% behind it. I know.
Yeah,
so,
we find fan fiction.
The anime Castlevania.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Castlevania? Have you watched that anime?
No.
Oh,
I will though.
Yes, it's vampires. It's based on the old game that comes from, gosh, you both made it, Steve. I don't know if it's an acquisition or what it was. It's an old game that's like on a Nintendo. And they had even been an Atari game. But, it goes way back. But the anime is just phenomenal. The graphics, the storyline. I mean, the character creation is just amazing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that learning to write using fan fiction is amazing because you already have character and setting. You know, those are the two hardest things as a new writer to really get your head wrapped around. All you really have to deal with, and this sounds really kind of like I'm simplifying it, is conflict. So you learn to write conflict when you're writing fan fiction. And then at some point you're going to come up with a conflict that doesn't meet your characters, doesn't meet your setting, and you're going to need new characters and new setting, and all of a sudden you're starting to write your own stuff. And it's like magic.
Yeah. It's like you put on a line. Yeah, you flip the switch.
Yeah.
It's fan fiction, I think, I've always thought that it gives writers a zone that where, the world building is there, gives them some comfortable parameters so they can focus on, the character development and plot development. And like similar to what you're saying. And it's, I definitely see, I've seen a lot of writers that have really done well coming from that. And now are, of course, writing their own novels.
We wouldn't have Twilight.
I would take a Twilight type sale any day of the week. Any day.
Got it.
Yeah, maybe not one that all writers admire as much in terms of the writing, but sales wise, 50 Shades of Grey, that came from a fan fiction origin.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And fan fiction goes there pretty quickly.
Yeah. So that's fun. But fan fiction is definitely a good tool. It can be a good tool for writers. and I don't think it's discussed enough, you know.
The other series that really impacted me as far as character development is, it's another manga series. It's called Blade of the Immortal, where a guy, all he wants to do is die, but he has to kill a percentage of men first before he's allowed to die. So it's pretty violent. But in the meantime, he meets a young girl who needs vengeance for her parents' death, and they kind of team up together. And you look at those interpersonal relationships and the way they react. And, again, the conflict is just really well established.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I'm not familiar with that one. But I do think it's awesome that that your influences span everything from, you know, like classical literature and Shakespeare, mm-hmm. all the way to you know, the anime manga world. That's awesome that you have that kind of mix in your influences. Yeah, that's
well,
awesome.
I grew up in a used bookstore, and so when I was little, my job was to, like, shelf books, which is all you did all the time in a used bookstore. But I could read by author, so I read everything that came into the shop just about over the years that I worked there. So I read all the fantasy, all the sci-fi, you know, because I had already read, by fourth grade, I had read every book in the children's library at our town library. And they wouldn't let me read adult books. So...
Yeah, Holly lived in her local library quite a bit. Didn't you, Holly, growing up? Yeah.
Yes, I did. And the school library, I mean, I like grab older, you know, all the things that were age appropriate. I mean, I would take as many books out as I can that they didn't allow, return them, and then one before, you know. It was like an insatiable hunger, you know, getting more and more and more. And then I was like, Mom, I need the library. You know, I've maxed out the school library for, you know, the next 2 weeks. I need to go to the library. And, you know, my mother was not very encouraging with everything. She thought it was a waste of time. But, yeah, I've always loved to read. And that, you know, that was my first love. And
yeah, I agree.
I still love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I went to libraries as a kid for sure, but both of my parents were bibliophiles, and so we were flooded with books in the house as it was. So yeah, I had no lack there. It was definitely a great experience growing up with the folks that I had.
I did it with my own children. I would go every 2 weeks and drag them with me. I'd be like, "Come on, we're going to go get some books," even though even when they started school. We still did this, and I'd be like, "Come on, let's go." Or any special reading things they were having at school, scavenger hunt, whatever they were having in the summer, you know, we would be there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Us too.
Yeah.
We always did. It's
yep.
Even with my grands, I do. We have, you know, we always did the kids' library programs.
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
Well, there any other? Well, are there any other irons in the fire you have as far as writing projects coming up and begin early this next year or into 2023?
Well,
that you haven't mentioned.
The comic books are going to be the big one because Watson wants at least two more issues of my standalone with him, and I had used to have 12 pages, and now he gave me 22. So,
nice.
But that's okay. Yeah, it's really nice. I did a story arc for him, and it looks like it's about a 40-issue story arc. So I can keep him in books for a while.
Nice. So,
Everybody
make sure you get your number one. Yeah, get that number one issue collectible.
Yes, it's going to be – and the Cypher issue is really nice because I actually have two out of the three stories in that are mine. So one I wrote
very
with
nice.
Alyssa, and then the other one, he gave me a character that he was never going to do anything with. And he goes, "Write me a story for her." I was like, "Oh, I can do that. Let me do that for you." So,
well, we don't we do not get a lot of writers for comic books that we talk to on the show from time to time, and so I always like to ask this one. But describe the process, like a lot of writers of prose and all may not understand how comic book writing is or how the process flows for comics.
You said your plot or your character first.
It depends. When I'm writing for FSK, they give me a character, and then I have to write for that character in his world. So that's where my fan fiction writing holds me true, because I can get engaged in somebody else's universe and world building pretty rapidly, and then go ahead and write for his characters. When I'm writing my own stuff, the one I'm working on, Jubilation, that's an idea I've had for a long time that I've tried to write it as a piece of prose, and it just seemed too visual. So,
it works better as a comic book format.
Yes, because it's a quad of four main characters that transpose into their spirit character at night and fight in the spirit world. So that's watching them go from like a chubby round man into a thundersome turtle, you know, that's visual. That's hard to put on the page so that the reader can see what I see.
Mm-hmm.
So figuring out that it wasn't a novel took me probably 4 years.
Wow.
I kept trying to make it work. You know, it will work. It doesn't work. But when I'm writing for FSK, what I write for, and I learned for even for my stuff, is that I'm not writing for the reader. I'm writing for the artist. I have to put words on a page that'll draw a picture in that artist's mind to the point where he can say, I can tell it better than your words if you will trust me.
Uh-huh.
And when that happens, that page is a wow. So actually, it's a lot like screenplay writing, only it's different, obviously, because it's more descriptive than screenplay writing, because you really are talking about what's in each panel. So I break down the story into however many pages it's going to be. So if it's 11 pages for Michael, it's 11-page story. I line them up so that I know which pages are opposite each other. So if I want to have a 2-page spread, I know where that goes in the story. And then, oddly enough, I look at the last panel on that page before I start writing. Like, what is it going to be to make that panel the one that you have to flip for the next page? And then I start writing the panel. And so I'll write page one, panel one, description, dialogue, sound effects. And that's the way I work my way all the way through. And then I give it to my editor. My editor goes through, and the first thing that he does is he checks to make sure my page turners are there, because, you know, there's nothing than being so bored you don't want to flip the page. And then he makes sure my pages all line up, and then he goes back through and edits the camera views or the pictures or the dialogue. He tends to add sound effects because I don't usually write them in right away, because I don't think of how it sounds. I always think of the picture and the words. And then after he's approved and it's approved, then it goes to the artist. And then we have conferences with the artist. They draw. We talk about – they draw what's called thumbnails, which are tiny little sketches of each panel. So you can see how they line up on the page visually. And I'm really bad at looking at those because I can't really see – I'm like, yeah, that's a ball and a stick, and it looks like it has legs. You know? But my editor, this is where you want a really good editor, can look at it and go, okay, can you, you know, I want you to angle up this so that we're looking at the feet up and blah, blah, blah. And then after the artist is, all of their thumbnails are approved, then they go and they draw. And the reason we do all the thumbnails first is because any corrections that need to be made are much easier and cheaper to be made on thumbnails than once they've completed an entire page. So it saves everybody. There are no changes or very few changes after thumbnails. The artist is just by that time free to draw. Then they finish. Then it goes to a colorist. And then you have a conversation with the colorist about theme and color choices, how you see it, and blah, blah, blah. And then from there it goes to a letterer, and then you have a conversation about what should this lettering look like, at which point I look at my editor, and I'm like, can you talk to him about this? Because I don't want to do it anymore. Because by then I, you know. And then it goes to the publisher, and then it goes on the schedule for a Kickstarter, and then we start doing all of the wraparound marketing for the Kickstarter.
Very nice. I know what it feels like when you see a character that you love depicted in art by a really good artist, and of course seeing covers and things like that. What does it feel like as a comic writer when you actually see the fully fleshed out colored visual based on your story? Give us a response on what your thoughts are.
The first time I saw Wolf, I was blown away by it, and I really, it didn't feel like my work anymore because it was such a collaborative effort, you know, that my work was done so early in the process. Like, actually, my writing piece for that was done almost a year and a half before I got finished art. So it's like, it was like looking at something new that somebody else had done. And then it was kind of go, oh, I remember that now. But it's just amazing. It's like, this is something you just don't expect. You know, because it's your page has your thoughts are on a page that somebody else had the same could take them and refine them and make it visual. It's I don't know. When I first held my comic book, I was like, I was walking around the convention floor going, "This is mine!" Everybody was laughing.
Oh, I can understand. Yeah.
That was my reaction. I was like, look, this is mine. And, you know, most of the time when I'm at a convention, even Comic Expo, we've been doing that long enough that I know 90% of those vendors. They know me. They, you know.
All right.
It's a family. It's not like total strangers. All right, the people that are shopping, they were a little wigged out. But
that's awesome.
I was just.
But to make sure you carry it around in one of those bags with the cardboard backing. You know, gotta protect that condition.
Yeah. Yes. Michael gave me three, and two of them were in cardboard, and one was to show off. So
yeah.
He knew.
That is awesome. But I'm glad you mentioned that it's the kind of close association with screenwriting, because that's kind of what I've always thought too, is that there is they're different, but there is a relation between screenwriting and comic book writing. And I've seen that.
I will say that learning to write as a screenwriter just improved my writing of novels by leaps and bounds. I became a much better prose writer after I learned to write a screenplay.
Dialogue.
I recommend it to everybody that's struggling with it. Dialogue is real. And here's, you know, even simple things like, you know, enter late, leave early. How often are you reading a book where the first three or four pages in a chapter, you don't really need those? If you cut them, because in screenwriting, you have to cut them because you have only 91 minutes if you're a newbie, you know. If you cut them, the impact of that scene is so much more powerful. And then we have a tendency to, like, wind down, you know. We end the scene, but we keep talking as we walk out the door. If you can figure out where to cut that scene and not let yourself indulge in that, that tightens up that whole scene. And when you do that with your book all of a sudden becomes like magically tight. It's amazing.
Yes.
Just that
absolutely.
One technique from screenwriting will pay off as a writer forever.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I personally love screenwriting, and I've I've adapted I have done an adaptation for somebody of their book to a screenplay, and I've also written original screenplays. And yeah, you are absolutely, yeah, describing it well there. That is definitely a reason writers should try it out.
Yeah, I think it's worth the craft. Yeah, I do. I mean, it was a year of study for me because I wasn't paying $40,000 to go to screenwriting school. So,
well,
I bought the books. I read the books. I read the screenplays. I studied. I reviewed movies. We ruined every movie I loved. And then I wrote like 3 or 4 screenplays. And then I realized that I just wasn't going to be able to sell them. You know, they're not quite good enough. They're good, but they're not good enough to, like, I don't know. I don't know the right people either. I think that's.
Here's something, food for thought as we near the end of the episode, but comic books also have a bit of a relationship, I think, also to storyboarding for movie production. So now that you have comic books, maybe you can find that easy segue to a film project now that you have some comics.
Yeah, that and $500,000 in cash lying around.
Yeah, that helps. That's for sure. But we're getting on about 3 minutes until the end of the show. And so one thing we always like to do is make sure that you get to tell everyone all the platforms that you'd like people to connect with you on and websites, anything of that nature.
Sure. I would really like everybody, because this is where my heart and soul has been, to be really connecting with the FSK. So FSKnow.com is where you can get the comic books from. FSKgo.com is where you can keep track of all of our Kickstarters, and mine is coming, so just keep an eye out for it. It'll be there in the next year. And at that point, that would be nice to really fulfill that at that point. And then you can find me on Facebook, Jerry Fang Maynard, author. All of my books are on Amazon. That's kind of it.
Okay. Yeah, so folks, yeah, definitely look all that up for sure. And I want to look into the comics. They sounded really interesting.
Yeah, I think you'll like them. And, here's the other thing. Contact me on Facebook. I will talk to almost anybody about anything, and I love to talk about writing, obviously. So I'll talk to anybody. You have a question, hit me up. We'll talk.
Cool.
We'll talk.
Fantastic.
Books.
Well, I've enjoyed having you and on the show, because this is, I believe, your first time on the Star Chamber show, as far as what I could – I look back at our archive, I think, the first time for you on the show. So, yeah, definitely don't be a stranger. I definitely would love to have you come back and give us updates on your books and comics and then your Virginia and Baltimore adventures as they start unfolding. So, yeah, come back and join us again.
Yeah. Thanks for asking me. I really appreciate it. It's always fun to be talking about this with you guys, and nice to reconnect after so long.
Yes,
absolutely.
Definitely.
Well, Holly, do you want to do the honors of the closing and the final words?
I can. Thank you for joining us again. And yes, you'll have to come back on when the comic book gets published and is available for purchase and chat more about it. But yeah, join us next Wednesday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern. I believe that is the, yes, it will be the Christmas Eve show.
Yeah. Yeah, Four Eves. Four Eves.
With Tom Smith and Dimmer and myself. But y'all have great holidays if you do not tune in between now and then. And we will continue at the beginning of the year then. But hope to see you next week. And I'm signing off. Have a great weekend.